This is a Collider.com audio interview.
If you don't mind me starting with that, what's your reaction to seeing the trailer upstairs? Is that your first time seeing it?
Yeah, I saw it. I'm very proud of it. Very proud of the movie that we've made, you know.
You obviously have been working on this for a very long time. How involved are you in crafting the trailer, showing how much is going to be given away, what shots, stuff like that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, you get pretty involved. I mean, DreamWorks and Disney have been very, very supportive in letting us have some input in the trailer. And you have Steven's input, you have Michael Bay's input, so you have a lot of people kind of doing their thing. But, you know, it's one of those things where my biggest fear in the trailer is the visual effects shots aren't finished. So you have to finish them just for the trailer. And so you try to just get these little snippets and things done, which sort of sidetracks you from getting the movie finished. But I'm pretty proud of the trailer. And, you know, like the mix and the sounds and the dialogue and all that stuff, we go in and I kind of sign off or make little tweaks in it and stuff like that.
Alex, what did you get to do on this film that you always wanted to do that's a little different from what you did on Beastlys, let's say? Or
thank you.
Is there something on this that you got to do that you go, yes, I wanted to do that?
I've got to make a film that, you know, every film that you go from, you know, you have different experiences, and this experience was, you know, working with people that I idolize, you know. DJ, I've loved his movies, from Disturbia to Eagle Eye. I remember reading Disturbia, one of the first scripts I ever got, and I go, who wants to make a movie about a guy in a house? And you watch it and you are blown away by what DJ does. You know, he makes an integrated story about a guy who you care about. And that's what I loved about Iron Number 4, is that you have all this great action and explosions and et cetera, et cetera. But at the core of it, DJ makes a story where you care about every single character. And you feel like it's real. You know, that's why Batman, the new Batman, works so well, because it's real. You don't have people flying around and this and that. You have real situations with real people, and you start to care about them.
So you got to experience that all in this movie.
Yeah.
In other words, the good character development and the action.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'll jump in and say, you guys filmed in Pittsburgh. I'm curious, what if you could go back for a day, what would you go do? What do you miss?
About Pittsburgh?
Sure.
I would go blow up the football stadium again.
The football stadium, you like that?
I had so much fun running around. It's so crazy as like being 20 years of age, and you still dream about going in the back garden and playing action hero. And you know, you go on this massive football field, or American football field, just in case anyone's English. And you've got to use your imagination. I remember the first shot we had was we run out of the tunnel onto the football field, and there's a piken on like this big archway that's jumping down at you, and then people are shooting at you, and the ground's exploding next to you, and it's just so crazy about, you know, all the things that you've got to imagine that are happening, and then you see the trailer and you see part of the film, and it all comes to life, and it's such a great feeling. So I would go back and blow up the football field.
Yeah, that was fun. The adrenaline of that was a lot of fun. Yeah.
The pressure of, I had to do this one move where I come around and I fling my hand up to telekinesis.
Send someone flying.
Someone flying, yeah. And as I do it, the whole of the back stadium blows up. So I had to get this move exactly right at the exact same time as hundreds of thousands of dollars or whatever was exploding behind me. That was fun.
I'm assuming this was a one take.
It was a repeatable, only we can do it twice because we had two things set rigged into the stand. So yeah, and he got it the first time. That's good. Yeah.
So when something like that happens, do you shoot it again, or if you think you got it?
Well, I move on. If you think you now knowing enough and having a couple cameras, you move on. You have it. You realize you don't want to spend. If you spend 4 hours getting a shot and you have that shot, I move on. You know. You don't. I used to be like, I need protection. We got to keep going. No, you move on. Got to keep doing it.
I definitely have to ask. It seems like everybody that you cast in this movie has an accent.
They do.
Was that the criteria for casting?
No, it's so funny. Well, you know, obviously, Alex, what's worked really well is like Alex is John, you know, number four. He has this really interesting American accent. You don't know where he's from. You can't place it, which I think is really interesting because the character is this disenfranchised kid who's been moving all around. Teresa, number six, I just thought, you know, reading this, like, she can be Australian. She can be who she really is and speak in her own tongue. Callan, who plays Sam, I saw his audition tape first before I saw him, And I just thought it was this American kid until I actually met him and called him in the room. He realized this is a fabulous Aussie. This kid, he's fantastic. And so, yeah, we have people from all over, but you know, it all kind of works out. You just pick the best people for the part.
How was working with Cal and Alex? Was it like a little brother feeling, or kind of like, what was it like? I mean, does he let you be a big brother, or is he more like one to be an equal, or how's that work?
But he's so intelligent, so intelligent, and some of the things he says, I don't even understand. and he is an amazing human being, and you know, if this does turn into a franchise, you know, me and him are on the road, and I'm so excited to work with him again. He's a great actor and hopefully a great friend now.
What about working with Diana?
Great. You know, as DJ said, you know, everyone is so phenomenal in the movie, and everyone has such a perfect role for them. You know, everyone who has been in this movie, you know, whether they have an accent or not, you know, has brought something special and made the movie unique.
That's funny. I'm glad you brought him here. obviously, the book is one.
Do you notice how my accent? We don't know where Alex is from. He didn't have too much dialect coaching. Yeah, his accent's somewhere.
Obviously, book is a book. Movie is a movie. Could you sort of talk about the differences that work from the book to the movie? And also, this is the first of what could be a series. Mm. You know, of films. How much do you know about where it might go past year?
Well, I think it's, well, I know for me, it was really trying to make, you know, you have the book, you have the novel, I had the outline for where the second book goes, the third book is sort of, you know, was on track to some of the thoughts that they had, but for me, it was really, very selfishly, trying to make the best movie that I can, trying to stick to some of the themes and elements from the book, but we did do some tweaking and changing. For example, I think the biggest change would be, and it's not a major change, but it is a major change dramatically, in the book, when it starts, he knows who he is. He knows exactly what he's got to do. He already has all these powers, most of these powers. And we decided for the film is like to make it a discovery that, you know, he kind of knows he's special and he's been chosen. He doesn't know what's going to happen. And so as these powers kick in, we, the audience, are discovering with him for the first time what's happening to him and then how are these going to relate to what happens later on in the movie. So for me, dramatically, that was sort of the biggest shift that we took. And then also just trying to say, there's a lot of sort of folklore and backstory and about like where he came from and how he got here and all that element and flashbacks and things. And I decided in the film just to keep it straight, make that the Chinatown of the movie. We know he's not wherever he's from. There's some other things and some horrible things happen. But for this particularly, you know, first film, it wasn't an important element of dramatically telling the story. So I think those are probably the two biggest shifts.
You obviously have Steven Spielberg and Michael Bay as producers. How were they ever on set? And sort of, you know, what's their input into this kind of... Those are two pretty big names.
Yeah, they are. Well, Michael was making Transformers 3, and that's why he was set to direct this movie. But he was doing Transformers 3, and that's why I was lucky enough to get the opportunity. And Steven was out prepping and shooting. He eventually was shooting War Horse. Steven was really helpful in the development of the screenplay, as was Michael. And Steven's been, again, very helpful in the editing room for helping us get it down. And always, Steven always is sending emails on the dailies because he's always catching up and watching and making comments. And so I think it's really like sort of bookending with Steven. Really, it's really helpful in the script development, as was Michael. And now coming to the editing room and the final mix, they're both kind of, Michael's got his hands full, but he's been very helpful too. So it's really nice to have those two together.
Alex, could you sort of talk about the fact that you're working for DJ, you have Michael Bay and Steven Spielberg as your producers? What the hell's going through your brain?
You know, it's funny, you know, you're a kid and you idolize these people like DJ, Steven Spielberg, Michael Bay, and, you know, you think of it as, you know, as a lifelong dream, and, you know, when it finally happens, it kind of takes your breath away. But at the same time, you're making a movie that you're so proud of, and, you know, at the end of the day, you're collaborating together to make a movie that everyone goes and sees and enjoys, and that's the final picket of it all. You know, you work with your icons because these guys know what they're doing, and they make the best movies that you've enjoyed in the past, and now you just want to come on the team and make a movie that hopefully everyone else in the world will enjoy as much as you have experienced it.
Alex, you play two tortured souls, basically, and I was on the set in Montreal, so you pay play a really tortuous soul there in Beastly. And then you, this guy's tortured.
I know you were on Sound Beastly. Okay. I went and got you a water. You still haven't thanked me.
My God, he remembers me. That's nice. Anyway.
Did you not remember me, Gary?
I would have made Joe obnoxious. Anyway.
It might have been the scars and the tattoos.
Yeah. That was you. Okay. The tortured souls in different ways. This kid is like, moves all the time. He's got this horrible background. And your guy in Beastly is a high school student as well, mm-hmm. who's paying for his arrogance, basically. Mm-hmm. So do you pick roles like that on purpose? Is that you? Or did you have a tortured teen childhood or something? Or why do you gravitate to these guys?
I think John isn't a tortured soul. He is a guy who, he has, everyone in life comes to a point where they have a choice. And, mm-hmm. you know, John's choice is he wants to lead a life of normality, and that's not his destiny. His destiny is he, you know, he is essentially this warrior who is from another planet. And, you know, that is what's so torturing for him. He isn't a tortured soul. He's very vulnerable because of the situation he is in, you know, and he may feel tortured, but really it's about choice for him, you know, and him wanting one thing, yet him having to do another to actually essentially get what he wants. Because if he doesn't become this warrior and doesn't go down this path, he's going to actually lose everything he's ever wanted.
He wants to be normal.
He wants to be normal, of course. Yeah.
All right. So could you sort of talk about, you obviously have two pretty big movies coming out in a very short distance together. What are you thinking about for the future for yourself now that you've sort of overcome these two challenges?
I don't know, just focusing on promoting this movie. I mean, I'm doing a movie at the moment, but I just, you know, I take one step at a time. I'm very lucky to be in the position that I'm in, you know, as you know, because I know that you're a movie buff. And by the way, I did go and get bought by Disney Watchmen. Remember you told me?
I was going to ask you about that, but I was going to wait till the interview.
It's fine. No, I went and watched the
director's cut.
Yeah, and I thought it was better. The thing is that you and me are movie buffs, and you know, to be on one side of the movie and then to be on the other is equally as entertaining. And you know, to be on my side and just enjoy every moment and make it count and last, because essentially you don't know if you're going to work again. You don't know if people like the work that you do, and you don't know if people like the movies that you make. So I'm very proud of this movie, and I'm very proud of the movies that I'm making, and hopefully you guys will enjoy it as much as I have.
Does the scale of movie or project that you're doing make any difference to you? I mean, was there an adjustment to being in the middle of something where you're at the center of it and there's so many moving parts?
I only want to do movies that are $100 million and I want to be paid. No, absolutely not. No, I you know, it's a weird thing. I like movies that interest me and stories that interest me. I don't think about how much money it's going to make the movie. I don't think about any of that. I think about certain aspects, like who's making the movie and who's going to tell a story that I want to be involved in. I mean, but I don't have that choice, and I never have. You know, I went up for I Am Number 4 and auditioned it, and you know, really wanted that part. You know, unbeknown to me, I didn't know at the time that I wanted it. But you know, when you find a story that, you know, has all these aspects of vulnerability and, you know, a journey. Everyone wants to go on a journey with a movie. That's why we go to a cinema and sit there for an hour and a half, because we want to escape whatever life we're leading. You know, we want to go and fantasize about something else. And that's what I really love, is finding a script and fantasizing and going to a different world and kind of portraying a character that is interesting. You know, because other lives interest us. That's why we read magazines like People and try and fascinate and drool over what other people are doing, you know. I just do it in a different way.
What do you do on a typical day off? Do you live here now? Where do you live?
I live here.
Okay. What do you do?
I do ADR or pickups for
that's not a day off.
Where do you go exactly?
No, I'm not a paparazzi.
Where do I go?
What is fun when you're not working?
Well, how about this? I'll give you a little deal. I don't answer your question now, and hopefully this won't happen, but if it does, after the movie comes out, maybe you might find out.
I was only kidding. Well, just one of the things you mentioned, when did you know that you wanted this part? You said when you went into the audition, you didn't know that you wanted this. Like, at what point did you go, oh, yeah, this is something that I'm...
You know what?
If I could actually add to yours, you should really relay your casting story for going in, because it's It's a good one.
I was very, very scared about playing John. I found it a fascinating story, but I found a story that I couldn't grasp, and it's got a very much rebel of a core, rebel without a cause feeling to it. And you know, talking about tortured souls, I had just come from Beastly, where I'd played this guy, and you know, I didn't think that that was the same character. But I went into the auditioning process and walked in and shook DJ's hand and shook everyone's hand, and I sat down and they read the first line, and I said, you know what, I'm really sorry for mucking everyone around. I didn't do it disrespectfully. I shook everyone's hand and said, I'm really not right for this, and walked out the door. And not because I didn't want to do it, just because I was scared. And, you know, I've always been the guy that loved being scared or loved having pressure on me, because I always wanted to prove myself wrong and always wanted to prove that I could do it. And I spoke to DJ, and, you know, I didn't know it at the time, but DJ obviously clearly saw it, you know, that vulnerability of having a guy who has choice. So I went back in and read, and I fell in love with the story. It's a weird thing for me, because, you know, you imagine this guy, this alien, to be this unique looking guy with this vulnerability who you kind of root for, you don't really know if he can do it or not. And I just wanted to bring that aspect to it, you know.
Thank you very much.
Cool, man.
Thank you. Nice to meet you.
Thank you so much, man.
Who made your jacket?
That's awesome. Yeah. Oh.
I do put the lids on.
We made the
deal.
Very nice. All right. We'll go right down here.
And by the way, thanks for the water.
Yes, yeah. I've thanked him before for the water. I remember that.
It's because. Let me stop. It's because. I'll